Okay, so we need this new theory of gravity, so where do we begin? How do we come up with a theory of gravity? Okay, so this is where the genius of Einstein and his thought experiments come in. Okay, so the idea here is Einstein already knows about special relativity. He has a great deal of experience with space and time and a great depth of understanding of it. And so what he says is, well, look at this situation here mimics a real gravitational field. Okay, this is this artificial gravitational field. So let's look at this artificial gravitational field in great detail, okay, and try to see whether we could learn something about a real gravitational field. Okay. So the idea then is, analyze artificial gravitational field for hints about real gravitational field. So you'll notice that Bob is inside this space station, and he's on some trajectory. He's moving through space in some way, but of course he's also moving through time. Okay, so if we draw some space-time diagram of this, this is x, y. So here's Bob's motion in space. He's just going around in a circle like this. But as time evolves here, okay, his trajectory is actually that, like that sort of thing. Okay? So he's on some trajectory, and we know all about space-time. Here's Bob on some accelerated trajectory in space-time. We should be able to account for the rate at which time goes, distance measurements, and all that kind of stuff. Okay? So let's analyze this situation in the context of special relativity very carefully and see if it offers any hints to what real gravity is about. Okay? So that's absolutely brilliant, and it was hugely successful. Okay, so here we go. So this was just, I mean, there were many other things, of course. I mean, I don't know what's in Einstein's mind. But there were many other things going on. But this was one of the things which was helpful in putting him on the right track. Okay? Understanding that gravity has something to do with the geometry of space-time. Okay, so the first special relativistic effect that we'll look at in this context is time dilation. Okay, so let's suppose that we've got Bob inside the space station, whipping around like this, and we've got a bunch of Alices outside who are at rest, who are not accelerated, who are just floating outside. Okay, so the picture looks like this. So I'm drawing a portion. I'm taking a top view down inside the cylinder. I'm drawing a portion of the cylinder here. Okay, and so here is Bob at one instant of time here, and Bob is moving with some velocity as he's whipping around, and around and around. Okay, and Alice, we've got two Alices floating out here. So here's one Alice who's not accelerating, and here's a second Alice over here, Alice prime, okay, who's also not accelerating. These two guys are at rest with respect to each other, just floating there, and Bob whips by them like this with a velocity v. Okay, so now the question is, when a certain amount of time, and these guys have synchronized their clocks using our clock synchronization procedure. They send a light signal from here to here, back, reflects back, divide the time by 2, yada, yada, okay? So when a certain amount of time, delta t, elapses for Alice and Alice prime, how much time will they have seen elapse on Bob's clock? Bob's got a wristwatch like this. So there's a little window. Alice and Alice prime can look in, and they see Bob's watch as it whips by. Okay, and so they see Bob's watch. Alice sees Bob's watch when it whips by her. Alice prime sees Bob's watch when he whips by her. Okay, what is the amount of time elapsed on Bob's clock relative to the amount of time elapsed on the Alice's clocks? What is the relationship between delta TB and delta TA? Does less time or more time elapse for Bob? Less. How much less? What's the formula? Okay, so it's less. Okay, so there's time dilation happening. Time is moving more slowly for Bob inside this rotating space station than for the Alices outside. Okay, and oh, one thing I forgot to do. I wanted to write this down as well. So let's actually work out something here. A useful little relationship that's going to be that we're going to need. Okay, so in this rotating space station, what is, like here on the Earth, the acceleration due to gravity, g, is 9.8. Okay, what is the corresponding value of g in this rotating space station? And how does it depend upon the radius of the space station and the rate at which it's rotating? Okay, we're going to need this relationship. So what is g inside the space station? How is it related to the, what is it? Well, that was fast. Okay, v squared over r. So that's the center-directed acceleration, which is v squared over r. Okay. Now let's bring in the idea of omega in there, the rotation rate. Okay. So what we've got is this guy is rotating at some rotation rate omega, and omega is defined as 2 pi divided by the period. Okay, how long it takes to come around. So the shorter time it takes to come around, as t gets the period gets smaller, the rotation rate omega gets larger. Okay? So that's the relationship between those variables. And there's a radius r here, and there's a tangential velocity v. So what's the relationship here? So the velocity is distance over time. So in one period, what is the distance that a point on the outside covers? 2 pi r. That's distance. Divided by time. How much time is it? T. And t, when we express it in terms of omega, is what? 2 pi over omega. Okay, so the 2 pi's cancel, and we get r omega. Let's write it as omega r. Okay, so the tangential speed of Bob in that space station is the rotation rate, the frequency of rotation, omega, times the radius. Okay, so for a given frequency of rotation, if we double the radius, we double the speed. Okay? So if we're, say, if Bob is here, his speed is that. If we doubled the radius, his speed would also double, obviously. Okay? Right. So that's that. So that tells us, what does that tell us? That tells us that g is equal to v squared divided by r. Well, here's v. If I square that, I get omega squared r squared divided by r is omega squared r. Okay? So that's the effect of g in there, and we'll need that. So in fact, we'll use it right now. So let's we know what v is. V is omega squared. Have I done that wrong? The acceleration is v squared over r. Oh, right. Sorry. when I was just v. V is omega r. Okay, let's plug omega r into here. So that's the square root of 1 minus omega squared r squared over c squared times delta ta. In fact, let's write it this way. Delta tb over delta ta, the ratio of the rates at which the clock in here goes compared to the clock out here, that ratio is given by this. Okay? Now, what happens if we, for a given radius of space station, what if we start spinning it faster and faster and faster? Eventually, this outside edge will be moving at what speed? Speed of light. Okay, so let's see. So when that happens, what happens to this? So suppose that omega approaches c divided by r. If omega is c divided by r, what is v? V is omega times r. If we crank up omega to c divided by r, what is v? Okay, so the tangential speed approaches the speed of light. Okay, and in that case, this ratio here goes to 0. If it was 1 minus 1, it goes to 0. Okay, and so the time dilation then becomes actually an infinite ratio or a zero ratio. Okay, so when a certain amount of time elapses for Alice, basically no time elapses for the Bobs. Okay, so we get that extreme case. All right, so next question. So So what we notice is that when Bob is out here at the very edge of the space station, and Alice's are out here, his time is moving more slowly relative to Alice's clocks outside. Okay, now suppose that this is the center of the space station up here, and we've got some Alice standing here, right, in that there's a little doorway, a little hatch kind of thing. So Alice is an inertial observer. She's at rest with respect to the other Alices out here. Okay? And Bob is whipping around like this. And inside this space station, there's this ladder by which Bob enters the space station, climbs down the ladder, and climbs back out again. Okay, so now let's suppose that Bob climbs up the ladder a little bit. Okay, so here's Alice up there. Here is Bob. Bob has climbed up the ladder a little bit like this. And Bob on this side. Okay, and what do we need to know? So we need to know that this whole space station is rotating some rate omega, and there's a distance from the center of the space station to Bob, which is r. Okay, and so what we notice is that as Bob climbs up this ladder towards the center there, his tangential speed changes. Does it increase or decrease? It decreases. If I've got this thing whipping around like this with some rotation rate, the point at the end is going twice as fast as the point at the middle. Okay? So as he goes upwards, as he climbs up that ladder, his velocity decreases. It's large out here, gets smaller, gets smaller, gets smaller, gets smaller. Okay, so as his velocity decreases, the time dilation, this is the relative velocity between Bob and Alice, the time dilation decreases. Okay, so the slowing of time decreases. So the point here is as r decreases, so as Bob climbs up the ladder, so he climbs against the gravitational field, okay, we notice that there's less slowing of Bob's clock. Okay, less slowing means it's going faster. Okay, times move more quickly. Okay, until, of course, when Bob reaches Alice's location and he's at rest with respect to her, then his time moves at the same rate as Alice's. But anywhere down here, it's slower, and it gets faster and faster and faster as he moves up. Okay? So now the question is, so this is what special relativity, so let me just back up. We've got Bob in this artificial gravitational field. We're asking, does special relativity tell us anything about the nature of this artificial gravitational field, which may or may not be true for a real gravitational field? What special relativity is telling us about this artificial gravitational field is that time moves more slowly in a gravitational field. Okay, and if you climb against that gravitational field, time should start moving more quickly again. Okay, and so that's the question. Is this true of a real gravitational field? By real, I mean one due to masses, as opposed to just simply accelerations. Well, is it? If I have a clock here, if I have two clocks, side-by-side identical atomic clocks, and I put one up here for a day and take it back down, will they have the same reading? Which one will be ahead? The one that stays will be ahead?
The other one.
The one that I put up here.
Yeah.
So it is a fact that in this gravitational field that we're standing in, which is due to the mass of the Earth, if I have these two clocks here side by side, if I put one clock up here and hold it up there for the day, time moves more quickly up here than it does down here. More time, more seconds will have elapsed on that clock. When I bring it back down again and compare them, this guy will be a few seconds ahead of this guy, or a few nanoseconds or whatever it is. Okay, so this is actually true. So the answer is a big yes. Okay, and where might this be useful in the real world? GPS, global positioning system. So in the global positioning system, we have We have the Earth here, and we have a bunch of satellites out here. We have very, very accurate atomic clocks in those satellites, and we have very, very accurate atomic clocks on the Earth. Okay? But the fact is that time itself moves at a slower rate on the surface of the Earth than it does out here. So we can say time at infinity moves at a certain rate. As we move closer and closer to a massive object, the time moves more and more slowly relative to the time at infinity. Okay? So, or just along this line over here, this clock moves more slowly than this clock. Okay? And you need to take that into account, or the GPS system doesn't work. Okay? And in fact, it's quite dramatic. If you didn't take that into account, the global positioning system would fail in about 2 minutes in terms of the in terms of getting military accuracy. Okay, so this is actually true. I had some actually math down here. I'm not sure we're gonna. Let's not do that. Let's not do this math. Okay, let's just leave that. I could tell you about it later if you want. Okay, so that's fantastic, right? We've just looked at this artificial gravitational field in the context of special relativity, and we've discovered something about real gravitational fields. Okay? And then we test that idea, and yes, in fact, it's true. So this is an extremely well-tested, super high-precision test, and it is, in fact, true. And this is called the warping of time, the gravitational warping of time. Okay. What about length contraction? That was the other big and interesting effect in special relativity. Okay, so we've looked at time dilation. Sauss discovered something interesting. Length contraction. So here's the situation. Here's our rotating space station, top view, looking down the axis. And let's suppose that we start with it not rotating. Okay? And what we've got in this space station is not just one bob, we've got a bunch of bobs. Okay? In fact, we've got 100 bobs. Okay? So we've got 100 bobs. And each bob is of width 1 meter. Okay? Does that seem realistic? What's 1 meter? Okay, these bobs are like big football bobs. Okay? So we got 100 bobs. And they're each 1 meter in width like this. And that's a bob. There's another bob. And these bobs are shoulder to shoulder, which means that the inside circumference of the space station is 100 meters. Okay? There's no gaps here. But if I draw no gaps, then it will look like one continuous line. Okay? And similarly, there's 100 Alices out here. The Alices are also big football Alices. They're also 1 meter. Okay? So the bobs are pressed right up against the wall of the inside of the spacecraft, of the space station, and the Alices are also very, very close to the wall. Okay? So basically, we can fit 100 1 meter Alices around like this. So there's one bob for every Alice. Isn't that nice? Okay. So there we go.
Yeah, I didn't hear that.
Okay, so okay, now we're going to make this guy rotate. Okay, and we're going to see what happens. Okay, so first of all, nothing happens to the Alices. Okay, so the Alices are still shoulder to shoulder, 100 of them out here. Okay, and let me draw them a little bit further away so that they can reach their arms in. Okay, so we've still got the 100 Alices around like that. Okay, and we've got these bobs in here who are now in motion relative to the Alices. So now we've got a situation like this where we've got what happened to that stick?
There it is.
Okay. So here is a bob. Here's an Alice. I'm an Alice. Here's a bob drifting past an Alice like this. And what happens is, at one instant of time, so there's a light signal which is sent radiating outwards in all directions from the center. And the instant that these Alices receive that light signal, what they do is they reach out their arms and they measure the width of the bob that happens to be whipping by them at that moment. Okay? So here's a bob whipping by a particular Alice. She receives the light signal. Well, time to measure the width of the bob in front of me. So what she does is, well, I can't hold on to that thing at the same time. Anyways, this thing is going like this, and she goes chunk like this. So she puts both of her hands, she touches the bob in front of her, she touches both of his shoulders simultaneously, as far as she is concerned. Dunk, dunk, like this. Okay? And that is the width, the physical width that bob occupies in her space. Okay? And now, of course, we know from length contraction that physical width is less. Okay, so when the space station is not rotating, then all the bobs are exactly 1 meter. Okay, when the space station is rotating, Alice will find that she needs to put her hands maybe this close together, and then she can go chunk and touch both of Bob's shoulders simultaneously. Okay, and then she pulls them back and says, yes, that bob. And then what about the neighboring one? Here's a neighboring Alice, measures the neighboring bob in front of her. Oh, it's only this wide. And then the neighboring one measures this bob. Well, he's only this wide. Okay, and so all of the bobs are narrower. Okay, so Alice reaches into this moving bob space, and her hands, instead of being like just straight out like that, her hands have to be held inwards like this. Okay, and the bob that she measures is only that wide. Her hands go in like this to that rotating space station, and we have a narrower bob. Hands go in, narrower bob. Okay? All right. So that's the situation. So, does that seem odd to you? Why do gaps form? So, there are gaps here. There are gaps between the bob's shoulders. So what does that mean? What does that mean that the bobs see? Well, what the bobs must be seeing is when they start out at rest, space station not rotating, they're all tight shoulder to shoulder like this. As the space station starts spinning up, they feel a couple things. One thing they feel is, or they notice a couple things. One thing is that they feel this artificial gravitational field, you know, pushing them to the floor or to the back or whatever. And at the same time, they notice that, whoa, there's gaps forming from one bob to the next. Okay, I feel exactly the same. I feel like, you know, I'm still the same height. I'm still the same width. I mean, everything's perfectly normal. I'm in this really strong gravitational field, artificial gravitational field. But nevertheless, I have the same dimensions as I usually do. And look, whoa, there's space getting between us. Okay, and so what the bobs say is when the space station is not rotating, they say that the inside circumference is 100 meters. Okay, now that it's rotating, they say this is 1 meter here. I'm still 1 meter, and I'm still 1 meter, and so on. But then there's these gaps. And so the inside circumference that's the co-rotating is greater than 100 meters, OK? So let's actually just write this down here. So, you know, when the space station was not rotating, it was maybe 100, it was a 100-meter jog around the inside. Okay, now that it's rotating really, really fast, the bobs are also rotating with the space station, and they find that it's maybe now a 200-meter jog around. Okay, and as we approach, as the outside edge approaches the speed of light, that outside circumference can become arbitrarily large. Okay, it can be a kilometer jog. You know, 10 kilometers, and so on. Yep. So one thing is that clearly, and the space station itself is rotating. Okay. So what you've started with is say a million atoms of metal are required to go around the outside edge of the space station. Okay, when it's not rotating. When it's rotating, the inside circumference, the co-rotating circumference, has become bigger, okay, due to this length contraction effect. Okay, and so that means that you're asking those 1 million atoms to stretch not over 100 meters as they used to do, but over now 200 meters or 500 meters. And so what's going to happen, what is going to happen to the metal skin of that space station?
It's going to break.
It's going to break. Okay, it's like an elastic, and you're stretching it like this. And it's either going to stretch, it'll stretch until it breaks. And so what you're going to have to do is, in order to make this space station work, is you're going to have to allow for breaks to happen and then weld in new pieces of metal. Okay, and then it keeps rotating faster and faster and faster. New breaks appear, you weld in new pieces of metal. Or you just make it out of a flexible material that's going to allow it to stretch like that. Okay? And in fact, so there's physically more volume inside this thing. Okay, so here's the space station here. Okay, if we start with this space station filled with, say, 1,000 buckets of water or something, it's all filled up all the way. If we start the whole thing rotating, the metal skin of the spaceship, as well as the space station, as well as the water itself. Okay, so if the water and everything is rotating really, really fast, then more space is inside. So for the Alices outside, the Alices see that this space station still occupies the same amount of space. It's still the same height, it's still the same radius, it's still the same everything. They just see this really fast spinning thing, but according to them, it occupies the same volume of space. Okay, but for people inside who are co-rotating with this thing, okay, their volume is larger. Okay, and so as it spins up, there's more volume, there's more elbow room. You could fit more stuff inside. You could fit more water inside. So Alice could sit at the top here and pour more and more buckets in. It started with 1,000 buckets, and then it gets more and more. And you can, and in fact, if the outside edge is moving at the speed of light, then you can show that the amount of volume increases exactly double. Okay, it's a simple mathematical calculation. If you know how to do integral calculus, you can show that.
So the
co-rotating space inside here is actually bigger. There's really more volume, more stuff. Like really.
Why?
Isn't that bizarre?
Yeah.
Yeah, the pressure of the water would be large. So I'm imagining that this water is incompressible. Okay, but sure, the pressure would be large because you're taking some water and you're whipping it around really fast. Okay, so yeah, it would be under high pressure. And Bob, like imagine this though. I mean, like imagine the forces involved here though. We're talking about this guy, in that amusement park ride. You're going at like 3 or 4 meters per second, right? And you're feeling it already, right? These people in these G tests, where they test G-force, their ability to withstand G-forces and stuff, it's only like a few meters per second. If you crank this thing up to the speed of light, the artificial gravitational field is so strong that you will be instantly flattened to like, pancake atom thick. Okay, you'll be like, a tomato just splat. Okay? So very, very strong gravitational field. But anyways, so there you go. And so what we could say, just putting some figures in here, we could say that L, big L, is, say, the proper width of Bob. So that's the width that a Bob at rest with respect to himself measures. Okay, and that's the same as the proper width of Alice, which is the 1 meter that we were talking about there. Okay, let little l be the moving width. The moving width of a Bob. So what's the relationship between little l and big L? Did we actually write that down the other day, or did we just do it qualitatively? What's the relationship? Little l is equal to what times big L? Yeah. So it's the same. It's the same factor. Okay. So as the speed of light, as this tangential speed approaches the speed of light, the width of the moving bobs goes to zero. Okay. So the picture then looks like this. You've still got your Alices, who are 1 meter, but they have to reach in like this, and these bobs are like microscopic. These bobs are like, they're paper thin. Okay, and there's gaps huge gaps in between, like giant gaps, because if this is a bob, And that's another bob, and they're very, very tiny. This distance is many, many bobs. It's many, many meters. Okay, so this could be like 10 kilometers inside. You reach into this co-rotating, this moving space, and there's 10 kilometers of space in there. It's really freaky. Okay, and R is not affected. The radius is not affected by this. Okay.